Hello, welcome back to Christian AF. This is Jen. This is just me on the intro today. We're having a little bit of a hard conversation about some things that happened in our city over the last couple of weeks. So if you're in a very vulnerably emotional place, maybe hold off on this episode if you need to. But I think it is a good, honestly, candid conversation around some of the events that have happened here and how we can respond to the hard things that happen in the world, especially as Christians. So a little bit more serious of a conversation today, but I still think very important and one worth listening to if you are in a space that would allow you to do that. Otherwise, save this episode and listen to it when you feel like you can. So here we go.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome to Christian AF. We're here. We have our friend Craig again with us today.
Well,
we have
our friend Craig. This is coming out. We recorded this after the next episode because we were trying to decide if we talk through this, address it. We're kind of winging this episode. It's a little different than our normal ones.
Yeah, today's conversation is kind of a difficult one. I mean, we're not really sure where the conversation's going to go, but if you are in our area, or if you watched national news last week, you may know, or well, by the time you hear this, it's been a couple of weeks, but Rockford had two different, very senseless acts of violence. A relatively young man stabbed a Walmart employee to death. And then there was a second incident
within the same week,
where a young man actually killed four people and injured, I believe, seven others. In an also very senseless act. Not that any violence ever has sense, but these especially were really difficult situations and very, neither was provoked, there is no answers to either of to these situations. And so we just kind of wanted to have, these things happen, unfortunately, all over the world every day. And this one, obviously, these hit very close to home for us, very close for some people that we're very close to. So we just kind of wanted to talk very, candidly about how, what our response as Christians can look like when these really difficult things happen. And also some of the ways that people respond when these things happen. So candidly, we don't really know where this conversation will go. But we think it's worth having a conversation.
It clearly rocked the community we're in pretty heavily, and it's trying to navigate that as churchgoers, as people who knew some of the victims, as that kind of stuff. It's just kind of a weird thing to navigate. And like you said, unfortunately, reality is that at some point, many of us need to figure some of that stuff out or know somebody who has to figure some of those things out and how to approach it, I guess in a Christian way, but in a general way, just reality wise. So,
I think the challenge is always in situations like this is that we're all going to have a response. And our response as Christ followers is going to differ because we're wired differently. We wrestle with different things. And then as a community, we're going to have a response. And those responses are going to vary vastly. One of the things that's been interesting for me just watching this week has been the reality of how much we long to understand why did something happen. Yeah. We want to know all the details. We want to know because if we could just figure out why, then we would be able to prevent this from ever happening again. And probably more importantly to us is it would make some sense in our brain because our brain doesn't know what to do with things that do not add up. Yeah. That you put 1,000 different sequences together in your head and it goes, no, it still doesn't, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And so I think we're all wrestling with that.
Yeah.
So some of the things I've seen recently in just general responses is obviously there's always going to be poor responses to these things. Mm-hmm. The way to approach them is just not a healthy, helpful, good way. Very specifically politically, to make a non-political, senseless, crazy week of violence something political is, first of all, if you tend to do that, don't. Mm-hmm. It should be without saying, but I've heard plenty of people within the church, people that we know that supposedly, you know, live a Christian faith walk journey, turn it into, I've heard the comments of, let's all ban knives now, because clearly those are the things. You know, those kind of comments of, like, you're truly bringing in political mindset into something that just doesn't belong. Don't do that. It's not helpful. It's not good. But I think, obviously, like you said, it comes with a lot of emotion, a lot of thought to things. So, you know, initially, a lot of people come at it with confusion. You know, why does God let those things happen? And I think it creates a lot of question within a community, within the church. It causes people to kind of step back and be like, what's happening here? And mm-hmm. how do we approach that, I guess, as a starting point, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think human beings, we have a natural proclivity to desire to fix, right? Mm-hmm. To fix an issue, to fix a problem, a situation. The most reactions, I think, after whether it's mass shootings or in our case, whether it's just kind of random, senseless rampage, I think the most reactions tend to be ones of people trying to fix the problem, right? And this comes out into, this could be people making, people making comments, this is why we need, you know, churches to be better, or this is why we need whatever laws passed, or this is why we need mental health hospitals opened again, this is why we need, I don't know, whatever. And that one is not really helpful in actually trying to get to the root. I was watching or reading a Substack, which is like fancy word for blog, today, about a guy was writing about homelessness. And he was writing the only cure for homelessness, and this was definitely like a politically progressive person, but the only cure for homelessness is homes. And it was an interesting article, and the guy clearly is not dumb. I disagreed with him, but is not dumb. But the one of the things that we tend to forget as a society is that the result, in other words, what takes place, is rarely, like, that's not the thing that needs to be fixed. There are levels or layers of things that take place that lead to the result. And so eventually you have to get, if you actually do want to quote unquote fix something or prevent something from happening, then you have to stop for a long time, think, and really get to know and really get down to the root of any sort of issue, whatever that issue is, whether it could be something as like a senseless violent act. It could be something a lot lighter, like road work or something, right? Like what are the layers that need to be addressed before you even get to the result of those layers?
I, for me, one of the challenges as I've thought about this is been, first off, you know, how do I process things myself? Mm-hmm. What are those urges that come up that may be political, or that may be, you know, that has been kind of wired into me? It brings up questions like, do I even know how to grieve? I mean, good grief. I'm 62 years old, and I still think I'm like, this whole grieving thing, I have not got this down at all. I mean, I don't know what to do with some of the feelings that come with this stuff. But probably once I get past a little bit of that, the thought that keeps coming back into my mind is, how do I love well through this? Mm-hmm. How do I love people who will be at various stages of response? You know, how do I be willing to listen to them? Because one of the things that we know is when we have been kind of – when our life has been disrupted significantly, there is a need to process things. And when we process things, they never come out right or clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They come out exceedingly messy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So am I able to withhold judgment on something that someone else says?
Yeah.
To allow them the space to be able to just verbalize some messy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, if for me personally, if I set my mindset, you know, if I kind of restructure my mind stepping into a conversation, I can prepare myself for that. But oftentimes we don't get the opportunity to do that. Oftentimes this conversation comes at us, or something from this comes at us before we've had a chance to think about it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know that I responded well to that. So, and again, I'm not saying, I don't think I have any answers. I'm just, I'm like, okay, so I got to figure this. Like, how do I suspend, for me personally, how do I suspend judgment as much and as often as I can right now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's important when stuff like this happens to acknowledge the many ways that people can respond. People will respond with anger and wanting retaliation. Mm-hmm. People will respond with fear or anxiety or, you know, and a lot of times... some, like, for example, the one that happened where this guy was just essentially running through a neighborhood, and whoever was home that got in his path was who was hurt. And I think that causes a lot of fear and anxiety in people of, you know, we already went through COVID, where a lot of people have just still not recovered well from that, and they're staying home and they're separating themselves from people. And now we have this happen. And it's like, now people are afraid to answer their door, and that's their response. Or they're afraid to, even more afraid to be in public or whatever that might be. You know, I struggle with feeling guilty for having feelings about what happened, which I think is like, I mean, I know we kind of like through 6 degrees of separation, I have some connection to a couple of the people. But I don't really know any of them. And I'm like, why am I having this overwhelming response to what happened? Now, part of that's just being compassionate and, like, you know, feeling for the people that senselessly lost their lives. And for these people that did that hurt these people. Like, you know, there's a lot to the, both sides of that. But I've been struggling a lot with, like, feeling guilty for my own response and feeling like not inclining myself towards the support part side of that. Does that make sense? Like, like, why am I even having like an emotional response in that way? And anyway, I'm not saying that quite right. Again, we didn't really talk this through, guys. But for example, last night I went to a small group and it's in the neighborhood where this happened. And one of the victims was a male, like he worked for the postal service. And everyone in this neighborhood has blue balloons on their mailboxes. And I'm like sobbing in the car. And I'm like, I don't cry either. But I just thought, it's so hard to feel that way when this stuff happens. And then like you feel helpless and you don't know, like, where's God in those moments?
Well, and I think we've had a few episodes in the past when we talk with general bigger picture situations like war. We've had a couple episodes on that and a few things of dealing with that. And I think one of the things that have come up several times is saying rather than saying where was God in this, is it's always repointing and saying where are God's people in this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And figuring out the response is always that trickier point, especially when it's a smaller communal. Which sounds weird. It shouldn't be. The bigger picture ones seems like they should be harder to deal with because, like, where is our response there? Like, that's a big thing to do. But when you're talking about literally dealing with the situations in your community that are tangible, it's also another, like, what do we do in this moment? Like, as a church, as a community, where do we step in? What's our roles? Short of just general prayer, what's our role? Because I think it's towing that line of overstepping. Community-based, you there's almost always some kind of like created anthem around something to just kind of uplift the community. There was a hashtag Rockford Strong going around. I think we talked about this the other day, but like, it just feels a little weird to me to like put a anthem around something. And maybe this is more of a personal thing, but that doesn't have to do with the community as a whole like that. It's just a very specific thing. But I think the thing I struggle with most, like, what's our role? Because I think initially when we heard about all of this, our community and our church was talking about, do we talk about adding, jumping on a meal train? Do we do these things? And it's the initial reaction is to like do things at and for people in the family. And the question that I would push back to say is that, yes, to a point, but there's a point where, we've talked about this when your dad died, Jen, was you have this overreacting as the person receiving all this stuff is just people just trying to dump stuff at you so that they're like, I feel good about response rather than understanding what is helpful in this moment. Dumping flowers at somebody is I'm thinking about you. I feel so sorry. That's a good thought. But at the same time, you were saying you guys were so overwhelmed with flowers.
Yeah.
It's just a bizarre thing to think through to say, like, what do we do with all this stuff?
Flowers and casseroles. It's like, you can only have so much.
Yeah. You only have so much fridge space and tangible things like that is the hard thing to navigate a little bit because especially when you're not like close or know, where do we step in? Like, what is our role? Is it just prayer? Is it as a community, do we just open the doors to the community to pray together?
I think it's hard because in our humanness, like, tragedy tends to bring unification, such as like that hashtag, right?
Yeah, and I get the reason behind some of that.
I think what it's hard to see is how not unified we are when things haven't been difficult.
Yeah.
And these things are happening all the time. This just happened
to our,
but even like people are murdered, right? It happens. And I think that's what's hard is like, we need to, I think, especially as churches and as Christians, like, how do we continuously build the unification across our community despite the hard stuff happening?
Yeah.
Or in like, even when things are not disrupted to this level. And in my sadness driving around last night of like thinking, where's God? Then I went to this small group and I was like, well, God is, it's not God's fault that this happened, which I think that's easy for all of us to question of like, why would God allow this to happen? And then what you're saying, Jesse, is like, no, the question is like, where are God's people? Mm-hmm. And then to have that emotion of like driving through this neighborhood, seeing our city unifying over the loss of these lives, and then immediately just being so sad and overwhelmed. And then to go to a Bible study and spend 2 hours talking about God and what happened. Cause again, we were in this neighborhood and seeing like everyone, God's people not wanting this for our world, right? Like, no one wants to see these things happen. And we're unfortunately, like, we live in a fallen world where these things will continue to happen. So how do we, I don't know. And I mean, this is questions people have been asking for thousands of years, right? Of like, how do we live, how do we support the world around us when these things happen? How do we live a unified life as Christians to support people when these things happen, because unfortunately we cannot stop them from happening.
Yeah.
And I think our responses are, how do we fix the problem? How do we stop this from happening? Okay, well, we're going to remove the weapons. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, we can do that. Yeah. And, you know, right or wrong, but whatever you believe on that stance, people will find a way. Like, we live in a fallen, broken world, and people, we cannot, we have free will, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I think we have to just understand that we can't eliminate these things from happening, but I do think there's a lot of work that we can do to mental health work, mm-hmm. and things that are I'm just kind of rambling, sorry. There are things that we can do that would prevent some of this, I think.
Yeah.
But I think we can't believe that we can ever until Jesus comes back and this world is fully restored, like,
yeah,
we cannot ever fully eliminate this. So how do we start to live lives not in fear and anxiety and in retaliation and anger, but how do we live lives that I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but like, what can we do as just humans who believe in God and in, you know, all of that. Go ahead.
Well,
cut me off because I can't.
I'm going to cut you off, but because I actually want to go back to something. I want to go back to the emotion that you had as you drove through that neighborhood, because it was very real right now as you think about it. And I want to be clear to say, do not feel bad about that.
Yeah.
It's actually an empathy. It's an ability to connect with the pain of the people that experienced this firsthand. And it's connecting to pain that we have all felt in the past on different things. Mm-hmm. And I'm immediately drawn back to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, where he says, you know, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And then I think about the fact that we cannot bring Jesus' comfort into a situation if we have not experienced it ourselves.
Yeah.
And so to be able to lean into that and go, yeah, this just sucks, you know, and to allow it to stir our souls deeply, I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, can we get, like anything, can we get overly camped there? Sure we can. But I think that actually prepares us to be able to interact with people in a way that provides a sense of, you really understand, don't you? Mm. I mean, because the challenge with when we respond to people with a fix-it mentality tends to be that people get this sense of, you don't even understand. You don't understand what I'm going through. You don't understand where I'm, you don't understand. You're keeping this up in some analytical world, and it's much deeper for me. And the emotion is what allows us to connect with them at that deep spot. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. But it's interesting because just even with the four of us, I can tell we all respond differently.
Yeah.
We all respond differently to this because God wired us up differently. And so, which then brings us to community. I mean, you said, well, I went from there. I went to a small group. We talked, we processed. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one thing that I have personally been concerned about and been praying for, everyone that was involved, is that they would not go through this alone. That there would be people around them that can walk with them through this.
Yeah.
And ideally, I would love for those people to be passionate followers of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Don't know if that's the case or not. But to go through this alone would be just brutal.
Yeah.
And you experienced what that's like, even though you can say, well, yeah, but I had, you know, 6 degrees, 5 degrees. Like, yeah. No, it doesn't matter. What happened triggered something mm-hmm. in you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think any sort of tragedy, whether large-scale tragedy like November 6th in Israel or September 11th, I mean, I talked to friends of mine who lived in New York City during September. I mean, they're still like, I won't go down there. Like, there's not a chance. I won't. And that, I mean, they didn't know anybody, right? And but they're like, no, there's just it affected the fabric. I think tragedy, larger or more massive, quote unquote, tragedies within a city, they tend to affect. They tend to bring up, oh, you know what? I think they bring up thoughts of, okay, on Tuesday this was not even a thing. Wednesday it's a thing. Tuesday was not a concern. Wednesday it's a concern. And so now your brain starts to go through, what else do I need to be concerned about? What are the other things I need to, what's going on in my city? Maybe it brings a little bit like what's actually, like, what is the safety of our kids or of our families? What is the safety? What is the, like, who are my kids hanging out with or who, what's going, like, so it brings up the, a little bit of a layered, look at the world, I suppose. Look at your city, look at your community, and then say, and then you could kind of compile that together over time and say, all right, we might not be able to fully stop these things from happening again, but what are the areas in our town, in our communities, in which we could at least offer some form of prevention? And what does that look like from a biblical worldview? Right? Like, what, like, are we allowing people to walk into our churches and then walk out without feeling loved and feeling community? And maybe there are people who walk into our churches one day who are looking to feel loved and they don't get it. And then that might be the trigger for whatever. Or there's somebody on the street who's looking to feel seen and heard or embraced, and we walk right by them, and maybe that person could be the triggering event that caused them to do something. You know, it brings up all of those, you know, it's cheesy, but what would Jesus do? Like, Jesus, yes, he healed a lot of people. He spoke lovingly to the downtrodden, but he also stood in the face of demons, right? And people who were chained up in a cave because they couldn't be in society, right? And he stood in the face there, and he, and so those, or you go to somebody like Martin Luther during the bubonic plague, and Martin Luther, as Wittenberg was being evacuated because the plague arrived, he's like, I'm staying. The people need me to, they need me to stand here in the face of this because they need cared for and loved and cherished. Or Bonhoeffer during the Holocaust, or, I mean, you see these moments. And so I think the church, yeah, there's a comfort aspect, which is a big aspect that the church needs to get better at, is providing comfort and healing and processing time. But there's also, hey, the church needs to wake up in many ways to how we interact and react to people who are slightly different or who are slightly troubled or who are obviously going through something that could cause them to do something evil. There's obviously an evil, a darkness inside of somebody. How do you bring that out? How do you, you know, strike the match within them, kind of a thing?
Yeah.
I think in the episode, next episode, you talked about that Iranian couple who just said, like, there's this what dark lullaby, satanic lullaby. But I think like we, it is when things are relatively simple and there hasn't been tragedy in a while, it's easy to forget that there is darkness in the world, that there is opposing forces to God, right? Like it's easy to forget how troubling like life on earth can be. Or it's easy to kind of like when we're talking about like war, like we see that from so far away and it's horrible. But I think it's much easier to remove yourself or to kind of bird's eye view of what's happening when those things, like when that goes on. And there's almost always war of some kind in the world. You know, we're never totally at peace in the world, right? And then when it hits so close to us, whether it's something as horrifically tragic as this, or just losing someone in our lives in a car accident, or where we just get so removed. I think we don't live our day-to-day lives very, most of us aren't super empathetic every day for those types of small, not small, any loss of life is tragic, but, it's easy for us to not feel the day-to-day impacts of the difficult things that are happening in life, or to like sugarcoat them or to try and solve them or whatever. And I don't know how as a church we respond more with more feeling of like you're saying, like embracing the feelings that come instead of just trying to immediately fix things, or to go the opposite way and move into fear and anxiety, right? Because I think the options typically for us are find the solution or be scared of everything. And they're not typically a combination of looking for solutions, or not even solutions, but change. And also while sitting in the feelings that come, because you're going to go through the grief stages of I'm mad, I'm sad, I can't think of all of them, but like there's all of these stages that like we do actually need to feel all of those things at some point. Otherwise, like you're saying, like we're not actually processing any of that. And I think a lot of us tend to just jump to whichever one we not even like best, but whichever one we resonate best, right? Like for like something happens and then, you know, like you're the, I can't think of the story, but where the dad attacked the guy that hurt his daughter in a courtroom. I mean, it happens all the time, but like his response is anger and retaliation. Totally human. Totally. Like I understand that. But how do we, and I don't know how as like church communities, we can be better places for people to find like true healing where they're going through as a community, like we're all accepting like how whatever we're feeling is okay, like even if it's anger or even if it's if we're in a disbelief stage or we're in a like whatever it might be, how do we as Christians respond when this stuff happens in a way that is just loving, but also accepting of whatever people's response is, because what we can't do is control how people respond.
You can't legislate.
Yeah. We can't narrate how you should react when things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. And you can't legislate goodness. Mm. Right. You can't, you can't, you know, that, I think that's, you know, the natural reaction, whether it's a shooting or an event like ours. The natural reaction is to jump, like Jesse was saying, jump to the legislative. How can we force people to be good? And how can we
activism and
all that stuff. And that just, that it's impossible. Mm. Like goodness, true holistic or holy, really goodness is only through the interaction of individuals with the Holy Spirit, and they only interact with the Holy Spirit through the community of Christ. That's the only, you know, theologically or whatever speaking, right? And so the church has to be much better at well, interacting. I mean, let's yeah. be clear. Well, you know, yeah.
And it's a connection of what Jen, what you said to what Evan is saying from the standpoint of we find these emotions that happen in the moment. And if we properly process them, they allow us to have great empathy. But to me, the key is moving the empathy beyond the immediate to more of a strategic empathy. And what I mean by that is exactly what Evan was saying earlier, is having an empathy for the person that walks in the door and does not feel seen or heard or loved. They have nothing to do with the incident that occurred, but we have grown as a result of this an empathy that could allow us to actually connect with them. Mm-hmm. So this sounds totally stupid, but it's a, you know, in some ways, I don't even like the phrase, but it's a pay it forward thing. It's like we've experienced something that has equipped us to be able to connect with people at a different level that are walking into our lives mm-hmm. every day. Mm-hmm. Do they feel seen? Do they feel heard? Do they feel loved? Mm-hmm. And as a church, if we can come, you know, on the backside, if we can get better at that, as a Christ-following community, if we can get better at that, then I think people have a better chance of experiencing a sliver of the kingdom of heaven and the power of the Holy Spirit, because we've created a safe place for them to be, and they feel seen and heard mm-hmm. and loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think one of the things I'm coming to terms with a little bit is how being overwhelmed by the things of this world that are, you know, I mean, we're also going into like an election, right? And the overwhelm of the people's voices giving their opinions, the overwhelm of mental health issues, the mm-hmm. overwhelm of violence, there's so many things that at the end of the day, honestly, are louder than God's voice for us. It's easy to lean into those and lean into the fear of mm-hmm. that which we can't control, right? Instead of leaning into God and leaning into our community, and finding community that can hold one another up, because we all go through seasons where we need people to hold us up. And then when we're able to hold others up, we need to do that. And that, I think, case in point of like our city right now, right? Like there are people who need our support, and then and eventually it will likely be our turn that we would require their support. And I think we in 2024 don't really, in the world of social media and all the things, it's easy to not, even be vulnerable enough to, I think I said this all the time, but to even ask people to say, I actually need the support. Like, I thought I was okay and I'm not okay. Or I'm so overwhelmed by even thinking of this next election and my fear of what happens that I can't turn the news on. So yeah. can you ask, and then that seems silly when we're talking about something very much like the other opposite end of that, of violence, but to be able to just say, like, to ask for support for people where we need it, and then to be a support where we can. And I think it's easy to just go into ourselves and not do either of those things. And then we're affecting our own mental health. We're affecting others by not being supportive. I mean, we didn't plan this, so forgive us if it seems disjointed, but I just think we have to find ways to be better at supporting each other. And I'm not sure, you know, we don't have answers, but how do we, the weight of this world, of like the humanness of this world is, it can be so overwhelming.
I mean, I think one of the roles, again, especially in, say, just throw it back to us, our case, none of us are very close to any of the people, at least at this point, that were affected strongly by it. But I think it's taking the role of making sure those people do have communities and people, like you said, Craig, is that can surround them, and how to do that, because it can feel very disingenuine as somebody from the outside just pushing through and trying to be that person to say, like, I'm going to be your person. Like, let me help fix this, or let me talk to you about this. It's very disingenuine at points, even if the intent is there, the right intent is there. But mm-hmm. I think it's just making sure as a community, those people have community around them, whether or not it's you being that community, and then you as a community being available and interruptible to the people who need it to process, to figure this out, to talk through, like, why is God doing this? You know, like those questions of, like, you know, we need to rework how the viewpoint is here. But, like, being available to discuss that is, I think, is a huge thing. And not be the fixer. Like these are the moments where we all feel like we got to fix it, and it's not fixable. And figuring out ways to support the situation is the bigger thing.
Well, and I think too, just this the issue of don't presuppose that we don't want to presuppose that we know who needs support and who doesn't.
Yeah.
Because what we do not know is what this triggers in the people around us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because we don't know what the people around us oftentimes have been through.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can look at somebody and go, well, they're, you know, just had nothing to do with them. Oh, but it may very deeply have something to do with them, even though they weren't part of the instance. Mm-hmm. So, I think being sensitive is a really good thing at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think what I would say to wrap this up is that obviously, like, even we're struggling with this conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just these are hard conversations to have. And I think that's part of what we want to do here, is even when things are difficult for us to talk about, or to even, you know, this was not a polished, not that most of ours are polished conversations, but we literally are like, what, you know, we do at least say, like, what are some things we want to touch on? And when we decided we were going to talk about this today, we didn't know. I certainly wasn't expecting to cry while recording. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, you know, we probably won't end this with saying question all those other things. So what I would say is, like, the questions we need to ask ourselves are, are we having hard conversations with people? Are we really showing empathy to the people around us? Are we even willing to have difficult conversations when hard stuff is happening? Are we contributing to making society as much as we can a better place? Or are we just... not, you know, are we just kind of living the COVID life of being locked up in our houses? And what I don't mean by that is, like, what you don't have to do is post all the things on social media and make sure your voice is the loudest one in the room. But what we do need to do is figure out how to exist with one another in ways that are healthy and empathetic and loving.
Yeah.
And seeing what the people around us could need, you know,
yeah. Availability and presence.
Yeah.
Is I think the biggest things.
And it's, pray for the world.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to add one thing to that. And that is, do not wait for bad things to happen to create safe places for you and others to process life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the time to try to figure out how to put it together.
Yeah.
Build into meaningful relationships that create safe spaces for you and for others to live life together.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll be back at our normal idiotic selves in the next episode. But yeah, thanks for listening. We will, I don't want to go with that.
We will, you will hear us soon.
You can still say our name. It's okay.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, I mean, honestly, maybe I'll just end it as question your availability in times of need like that. I think, and be okay with the fact that sometimes you don't need to be an active voice in it, and sometimes you just need to pray. And that's, sounds like a cop-out answer sometimes, but it's sometimes true.
And yeah. You don't have to need, you do not have to know the answer.
Correct.
Or be right to step in.
Mm. Yeah.
There you go. All right. I'm Jesse.
I'm Evan.
I'm Jen.
I'm Craig.
And that is Christian AF. There you go.
Thanks for listening and joining us on this week's show. If you'd like to support the podcast or just want to buy us a drink as an episode sponsor, check out our website at christianafpodcast.com.
While you're on the site, feel free to send us a message. We appreciate hearing from each one of you. Our hope with this podcast is to develop a community where you can openly question your faith, church, beliefs, and more.
Also, don't forget to find and follow us on social media at christianafpodcast. Share our episodes with your friends to help grow our community. We're always looking for questions, stories, or podcast ideas. You can send these to us via email at christianafpodcast@gmail.com or through our social media channels. So until next time,
stay curious,
stay connected,
and keep questioning.